Stars Today is next on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Second down and seven from the 15-yard line. Play fake. Manning looks, and he's going to get swamped. Ball's out. The ball is on the ground. Let's see who comes. It is still loose. It's recovered by somebody in the end zone. Let's see who's got it. Jacksonville's recovered. That's a touchdown for the Jaguars. The ball was loose. Jacksonville recovered it. Touchdown, Jags. Straight drop. Manning steps up, fires it out to the right flat. He's got his tight end. But well, ball's on the ground. The ball's on the ground. It's picked up by Aaron Coleman. Aaron Coleman up the left sideline. Aaron Coleman inside the five. Aaron Coleman. Touchdown, Jacksonville. And the defense has given the Jags the lead.
It's something that we had to do. We had to take our defense to the next level by getting takeaways and scoring the ball.
Three receivers plus a slot for Manning. Four-man front for Jacksonville. Straight drop. Manning looks. He's hit his sack. The ball is out. The ball is out. Jacksonville recovered. Chris Clements fell on it. And the Jags are going to beat the New York Giants.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome in Jaguars Today on this and every Wednesday, brought to you by our friends at Metro Rooter. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank Field. Jaguars Today just kicking things off on this Wednesday as the Jags on the field kicking off practice, at least stretching. I don't know how much stretching you need to do, Tony, when it's this hot.
I think you get
warmed up rather quickly out there, but they're out there in the broiler right now on the practice field, and let's hope they get through it unscathed, not just heat-related, but that's the last thing you want these last couple days. Here's some injury for the Jags. At least you're questioning a player's availability for the beginning of training camp, or even worse, probably won't see Marquise Liddle training camp, although we knew that going into this week that was the likelihood of all that going down. Chris Clements did show up, as we knew, yesterday out there on the practice field, and we'll hear a little bit from the Jaguars defensive end. Not exactly a guy, Tony, who's a quote machine. He goes about his business, doesn't really care for the spotlight, doesn't care about the whole media aspect of that's his prerogative. I'm fine with that. Show up, do your job. There are plenty of guys that always want to talk in a locker room as far as that goes. But we'll hear from Chris Clements today, probably a little bit from Julius Thomas and Gus Bradley as well, among those talking yesterday after practice for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Tony, I was split on my viewing last night. I watched Women's World Cup, the United States.
Yeah.
1-0, as you guys like to call it, over Nigeria. At least watch the first half of that and then, channel flipping. The rest of the way with the NBA Finals Game 6
right
last night. Golden State's a better team. We kind of knew that once Cleveland lost two of their top three guys.
When Irving went out in Game 1.
That was pretty much
in the overtime of Game 1. You kind of knew where the series was going to go from there. It was watching Cleveland win the next two in the series, and you're like, can they really do... I mean, it's an impossible task, it feels like. Can they really pull this thing off? And really, once we got to Game 4, the entire series was being played at Golden State's pace. And from that moment forward, Cleveland just wasn't good enough to hang with that team. I mean, it's the best team in the NBA this year. Golden State was all year long.
Had one of the 10 best regular season records of all time.
Right, and they're going through a Western Conference that was so much more difficult to go through than what Cleveland did with their three key pieces during the regular season in the Eastern Conference. I mean, they were a better team, and it became a question after it went 2-1 Cleveland. Is the better team or the world's best player going to come out on top in this series? And turns out the team won again.
LeBron came in straight off the ranch last night. Came in with the cowboy hat. He was rocking. I don't know if you call that quite the cowboy. It's not the 10-gallon variety, but he certainly looked like he was working out there in the back 40.
Sure.
Right as he came in. He's a man of the people. He's just an average guy. He's got to have, I'm sure, some kind of off-season job to pay the rent, make ends meet now that the season's done and those paychecks won't be coming in.
I'm sure.
On a regular basis. I've been accused of being, quote, way too literal on this point, Tony, but it drives me nuts as I'm listening last night to the broadcast of the game Mark Jackson is truly one of my favorite players of all time, considering he went to my favorite basketball school, St. John's, where they were, you know, he teamed with Chris Mullin and others on the best teams that St. John's has ever had, certainly in my lifetime. Then gets drafted by my favorite pro franchise, the Knicks, and plays a large portion of his career there. So love the guy as a player. Always loved him as a player. Couldn't care one way or the other about him as a coach because he didn't coach my team. But as an announcer, oh, my gosh, he grates on me. Quite a bit. I think he says a lot of things for effect, but this whole notion of players wanting it more, and that's why they're succeeding. Tristan Thompson, skies above the rim last night, Tony, for a putback dunk, and it was because he wanted it more than Golden State. I guess my question would be, what happened two trips down the court later when LeBron lobs an entry pass to him in front of the basket and he fumbles it away? Did the Warriors' defense want it more on that possession? Was that what happened? Did he stop wanting it as much? Was he satisfied after his tip dunk?
That's sports lingo.
It drives me nuts. I think he means it, though. I think these guys, when they say a guy wants it more, they really believe what they're saying out there. Am I taking it way over the top by you know, just getting tired of this overused cliche? Oh, my goodness. If we didn't have minicamp going on this week, and we got a lot to do today. Johnny O is coming in 10 minutes, and we'll hear from, as we said, a number of the Jaguar principals. I think we would reprise a show that we've done in the past, and we've got this one on the back burner now for sometime in early July. The sports cliches that you hate the most, the ones that the overused tropes by the announcers that they beat into your head as if there's some kind of gospel, as some kind of learned secret that they are imparting to the rest of us. Look at Tristan Thompson. He just wants it more than everyone else out there. They all want it, Tony. It's the NBA championship. That's, are you kidding
me? It's that coaching lingo. It's that lingo that you use with players to kind of keep them going from the time that they're playing, you know, YMCA level basketball up through high school and college and into the pros even. The coaches use that kind of stuff when we go to the sidelines, and we hear that audio all the time. Now, I think for professional basketball players or football players or baseball players, whoever it happens to be, that kind of stuff goes in one ear and out the other. It's like, okay, you know, I'm pretty darn good. That's why I'm here, and I'm going to give you everything I got, but that's what I got.
Right? Have the Jags just not wanted it enough the last 3 years? No, has that been their issue?
No, they're not good enough.
Really? It's just that it wasn't just the desire to win?
No, it's the guy across from them is better than them.
Did the Cowboys just want it more in London last year, Tony? Is that why they won that football game?
No. I don't think Seattle beat Green Bay in the NFC Championship game because in the last 5 minutes of that game, they wanted it more. Green Bay blew it.
Right. Sometimes you lose. Sometimes the other team's better. Sometimes you get out of position. Sometimes the better team doesn't always win. But it's not because the other team wants it more. If you're in the championship stages of your sport, I've got to presume that when LeBron James is bricking three after three attempt in the final minutes of the game, it wasn't because he stopped wanting to win the championship.
Yeah, it's not because he didn't want those shots to go down.
Oh, my goodness, does that drive me a little bonkers. But that's my issue, my cross to bear. But your cross to bear is if you tune into this program, you get to hear about my crosses to bear.
Right.
Okay, so that's my issue imparted on you. The Monday Morning Quarterback, Tony, an offshoot of Sports Illustrated. Peter King heads up that section of internet space out there, and along with a number of other writers, are counting down the 100 most influential figures in terms of the National Football League for 2015, and they've counted down the first 20. So numbers 81 through 100 have been posted out there. Two Jacksonville Jaguar-related individuals, and I say related individuals because one is the owner of the team. He doesn't play, obviously, coach or anything else. And your quarterback, Blake Bortles, both are in the first 20 revealed of the 100 most influential people, according to the Monday Morning Quarterback, for the 2015 season. Blake Bortles came in at number 98, and a little bit later on in the program, I'll read you the rationale. Gary Gramling from Sports Illustrated is one who did the write-up on Blake Bortles, just a couple paragraphs long. We'll give you some insight into that. In the meantime, you can check it out at SI.com. And also, Shad Khan coming in at number 84 on the list of the most 100 most influential figures in the NFL for 2015, and we'll tell you what they had to say about Shaw Jenny Vrentas. Is it Vrentas? Is that how you say it?
I believe so.
I think it's Vrentas, right? With the, because she got the VR thing going on there. She did the write-up on Shad Khan, so we'll get to that coming up today as well. Question of the day. This is one that we straight ripped off from the drill yesterday, pretty much, right? Thank you, Jeff and Balls, as they were discussing kind of the core guys you would build this football team around if you could only take five. Who would they be? And I think for a lot of people, there will be several similar guys on many lists. Any list that doesn't have Blake Bortles, probably an invalid list, honestly.
Probably, yeah.
Right? Or, you know, I mean.
Not probably, it is an invalid list.
Right, I mean, even if you don't think Blake was a superstar, you gotta, if you'd have to move forward with him on just the chance that he could turn into something you don't expect him to, because that's how important that position is in the National Football League, and I think his story is yet to be written. We don't know if he's going to be great. We don't know if he's going to stink, or we don't know if he's going to be somewhere in between. We know this, Tony. He does want it. So that's good. That should be enough of a signifier of success for Blake Bortles that we should all rest easily, because he does put in the work, certainly behind the scenes and in front of the scenes, so to speak.
No, he does. And I've said it before. I know we're kind of joking around about the want to aspect of this thing. But I've said it before. Blake is a guy who truly seems to be embracing the position he's been put in here in Jacksonville, wants to be the best quarterback that he can possibly be. And I think he is putting in the work to become that. If Blake Bortles, and I've said it before, but if Blake Bortles fails as an NFL quarterback, it's going to be because he can't play quarterback in the NFL. It's not going to be because he didn't do everything he could to be successful at this level of football. If he doesn't succeed as an NFL quarterback, it's because he just couldn't play the position.
So today we talk about building blocks of this franchise. Again, think of it this way. You're drafting five guys off this team. You don't know what other players you're going to be able to acquire. But who are the five guys you would say, all right, I'm jumping in the lifeboat with these five. We've got to restart the roster. It's kind of like repopulating the world, right, if you're the last man on earth, but not really. Anyway, which five would be the core that you would build this roster from in the future? What are the five most significant guys, not only today, but going forward as well? If you think about it, if you're building the franchise around these guys, then you're thinking of them, in my mind, as at least a multi-year investment. You got to be thinking at least 3 to 5 years with these guys that are on the team, in my opinion. Maybe you won't feel the same way. But the question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, is if you could have only five current Jaguars to build the team around, who would they be? Share your thoughts on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler, on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. You can call the program, as always, at 641-1010, and also text us at the same number on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, 641-1010. Metro Rooter brings you the show every Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Johnny O, John Osier from Jaguars.com, going to join us in a few minutes live from OTA practice, or minicamp practice number 2 with your Jacksonville Jaguars. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
We get an extra Leo back, so the heat today, definitely, we were definitely glad to have him back during that heat. But at the same time, he looked good during practice, real good. You could tell he was working out over the break and stuff like that. So with a guy like that, he's been in the system for a long time. We knew he wouldn't miss a beat.
Jaguar defensive lineman Ryan Davis talking about his teammate Chris Clemens making his return yesterday for mandatory minicamp. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, joined by John Osier here in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Johnny O from Jaguars.com, how are you?
Good.
Are they jealous of you out there that you get to come in and get a little AC for a few minutes?
Not for that reason, but yes, they're
jealous. Many other reasons?
I mean, that's one of them. But that's probably foremost right now. It's hot out there.
Anticipating your final landing spot on the Monday Morning Quarterbacks list of the top 100 influential figures for 2015 for the NFL.
Well, how fast are they going? Are they going week by week?
I think they're doing like 10 a day.
Or 10 a day. And they're only at 80?
Yes, they've just done it for the last couple of days.
I got a good week or so before I got to worry.
You think so, right? Like maybe single digits?
Like sometimes you toss and turn before an announcement, like the night before.
Right.
I'm figuring I got in.
You're not nervous yet.
Yeah, Thursday or Friday, right. Then I'll start thinking, maybe.
Like when there's 10 people on stage and they're announcing the ninth runner-up or whatever, John's like, yeah, it ain't me.
Right, I'm going to the back for a beer.
You're right. All right, I'll be back when it gets down to the final three as far as that goes. I guess the story of yesterday in part was just the hottest week of the year so far. Gus Bradley remarked about it yesterday. Yeah. It seemed like they're dealing with it okay, though.
Well, you sort of asked me over the break, hey, anything going on yesterday that makes sense to talk about? And it was really an off-the-field day. It was Chris Clemens talking. It was Gus Bradley talking. And I think that was mainly because it was so hot, it was tough to judge anything in terms of performance. The defense was a little ahead of the offense, but that's been the case throughout OTAs, and I think that's normal for a bunch of guys on defense who expect to be sort of 3 years in, for the most part.
With the same system.
Yeah, I mean, not all of them are, but the core, and they get the defense. And Julius Thomas said something interesting about the offense, which has been said a couple of times, that it's a little bit of a complex scheme. It's not complex if it's at its basic, but if they're going to run everything in this offense, there's a lot to run off of the basic form. So I think they sort of expect right now to not be going at full speed. That's what OTAs are for. They're supposed to be the rough draft, and you're supposed to be closer to the real thing come training camp.
The way it's timed out, you know, I hear the comments of these guys, but you look them in the face while they're saying it. So
I try.
Or
I'm a little intimidated.
Right, you kind of like stare just
past
their head.
Yeah,
right, you're
right.
In their presence. Julius Thomas seems to appreciate what he sees in Blake Bortles up to this point. What kind of sense do you get when he talks about Blake? You know, how enthusiastic he is about the idea of them hooking up
well,
this year?
Well, I think, first of all, he's in kind of a tricky spot because at least once every couple of times Julius talks, he's asked about Peyton and then Blake.
Still? He's still asked about Peyton?
A little, yeah, I mean, that's going to come up because, and that was yesterday. And
you want to call anybody out for a, Howard will call anyone out, by the way, if he doesn't like the question they ask. So if Howard
you
ever
think?
Asks, yeah, I know.
You get the eye roll.
We all know, right? You get the,
yeah,
and, the hard exhale. Of
sometimes he'll get kind of thrown and do it to himself. It's a weird look.
Right.
So,
oh, wait, I asked that right. question. Yes, I asked that question.
You know, yeah, some they do. I mean, Andy's in a tough spot because he played with Peyton for 2 years. And what Blake's doing right now is not going to be on the level physically, mentally mature as Peyton Manning. So I think from listening to Julius, you can tell that he likes Blake's approach. He was very pointed yesterday in saying, look, it doesn't matter if the quarterback is Peyton, who's been here 18 years, or Blake, who's been here too. He's the quarterback. He was asked, you know, are you helping Blake? And Julius, I think, wisely said, no, the quarterback's the quarterback. You know, he's the leader. If he asked Julius for something, he'll help him. But I don't think Julius Thomas is going around going, hey, Blake, you need to do this on
right.
third and fourth.
I'm so much more accomplished than you.
Yeah, and again, he's been pitch perfect so far in terms of how he's handled questions, his leadership role. But it's clear listening to Julius, they've spent some time together in the offseason. You can tell that he's optimistic that the approach that Blake takes, the being the first one in, last one out, his work ethic, his study, will lead to good things. He hasn't said, hey, this guy's an all-pro, but he very much likes the approach. And like most of the guys on offense, there's a belief that Blake is doing all of the things that you've got to do as a guy with 14 games experience to get to a different level. And they haven't seen that level yet, but all you can ask right now is that he do those things.
Chris Clemens back yesterday and talked a little bit as well, and which is a rare occasion for him. He didn't do much with the media, and that's his prerogative.
He sometimes gives that same look that O'Halloran does to questions, by the way. They're birds of a feather.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because the only
and they'll do it to each other. It's very ironic.
Let's look at each other.
It's off-putting.
Are you kidding me? You think I'm going to answer your question? You think I'm going to ask you anything? The only interaction I had with Chris Clemens was at the Super Bowl a couple years ago when he was on Seattle when they were playing Denver, and I told him I wanted to ask him about Gus Bradley more than anything,
right.
And he was great about it, you know? And even in that setting where it's media day, there are a lot of guys that don't want to talk.
Right.
Obviously, Marshawn Lynch carried it to an extreme, but you know what I'm saying? I mean,
now he's very good, very, as I'm not doing right now, does a good job of making his point. You know, and when he feels like talking, he's very well spoken. So, but he's a guy who doesn't feel like talking to the media a whole lot, and that's okay. You know, I'm in the media. I don't particularly want to talk to me that much.
I wouldn't either, but we kind of are contractually obligated to do that. Now, kid, Chris Clemens did say he thinks he's going to be more productive this year, though, right? Slim down a little bit?
Right, and aside from all the obvious questions about not being here the last couple of weeks, which is a non-issue because he doesn't have to be, that was really the news. He's down 17 pounds, he says, from last season. He said he's where he wants to be. He feels like that weight that he had last year held him back a little bit in his productivity. So he feels like he's going to be more productive at this weight. So,
and he may well be. Yeah. I mean, 8-sack season, it wouldn't shock me if he had.
Now, I don't particularly. There was a little bit of a reach where he said, that's why I'm not here. I don't know about that. I mean, he's not here
getting
because
himself in that kind of shape is why he was not here.
And that's fine. I mean, if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. But again, the overriding point to this is, as an NFL player, being essentially a contracted employee, that your employment is based on how you perform, he knows in the big picture his job is to get himself in the best shape to perform. And if he does that, then nobody really cares if he was in OTAs on October 15th.
No, nobody will. And you say it doesn't matter because it's voluntary. And I agree with you in principle, but we all know in reality that goes along with, as long as you are a necessary piece of the 53-man roster,
well,
right?
The other side of that, though, is, and I think any player sort of knows this intrinsically, if you're not a necessary piece, it doesn't matter if you're here or not. So,
but it could help you. If you're a borderline guy, I guess is my point, right? Like, for instance, Sean Green gets released yesterday in Tennessee after skipping OTAs. It's a 90-man roster situation. My bet is had he shown up for OTAs, he would still be on the roster, at least fighting for a spot at this point in time.
Yeah, I think a player, I didn't ask Chris this yesterday, but my guess is he would say, hey, if I'm not performing, I'm gone anyway. You know, and if I am performing, then I'm going to have a job in the league.
Granted, but my point being, like if Dante Fowler Jr.
I get your point, I'm just not agreeing.
Well,
I'm hearing it.
I think my point is right. I don't think you are getting it because you would agree if you did. If Dante Fowler Jr. was healthy, I think Chris Clemens' roster spot would be more up in the air, don't you? And in that circumstance,
perhaps,
maybe he still chooses to do things that way. I'm just saying there.
I don't know. Again, I don't pretend to know Chris Clemens as well as I do some of the other players, but I don't necessarily think you can say if Dante Fowler was healthy that Chris Clemens would be here.
But I'm saying that you reach a point when you're a veteran that you're closer to the roster bubble than at other times.
Sure.
And I don't think he's that close to the roster bubble is my point. If you're on it, I think it behooves you to do everything above and beyond. Or you know what I mean? And I don't think going to voluntary OTAs is
in one sense,
beyond, but
it never hurts to do the right things, to say the right things, to sort of go along with the team. But there are guys who believe I'm going to get released or signed based on my productivity in the regular season and in the playoffs, and that's all I care about, and they don't particularly care about being at OTAs. And as long as they're performing, that's okay.
All right, you know what? He's here, and now let his performance speak for itself.
Absolutely.
Talk about the guys a little bit. Not so much.
And you know what? If he gets 15 sacks, they'll probably tell him all to stay away from
right.
OTAs.
Right. Well, I don't know if they'll do that, but that's Chris. That's how he does it.
Sure.
And he'll be fine with that. Maybe he'll get to skip a veteran mini.
It won't work
year.
Until July 28th next
right.
year if he gets 15 sacks.
And who has been catching your eye defensively, whether it was just yesterday or really over the last 3 weeks of OTAs?
Linemen, it's tough to tell. Gus mentioned Jared Odrick yesterday and said he had a little trouble right at first getting used to I think it was the pace of the system that Gus said, or the pace of, how they go. But you would expect Odrick to start performing well. He's a veteran. He's a guy that is clearly a premium level athlete, premium level player. So he's starting to play better. Telvin Smith always stands out because of his speed. I think Jonathan Cyprin's going to have a better year than he has the last couple of years. I can't sit here and say that there's been a ton of plays where you went, whoa, look at Jonathan in OTAs, but he looks the part. And I think most of the defensive starters, and I would throw Grotz and Colvin into that because people are talking about four cornerbacks. Dwayne Grotz had a play yesterday, a deflection. I think most of the guys that you want to hear are playing well or are starting to adapt and get it, at least look the part and they don't look lost and they look very comfortable in the system in its third year.
All right, Johnny O, Jaguars.com. You got Jaguars.com live coming up at 12:30.
We do, and Allen Robinson will join us. And,
nice.
And that'll be good because Allen is an ascending player, clearly, who they believe is going to be a core part of the offense. And he's also a very interesting guy to talk to. So I think it's going to be a good show.
I will be the judge of that after we hear it today.
Well,
see it.
Once you see it, you won't really need to have him on for a couple of months.
This is true.
So we're really doing it for you.
Tell Dickman, let's get him in here at 11:40, Tony. And we can
get that done, right? That'd be beautiful.
wouldn't it be nice? All right, Johnny, get out there, slather on some more sunscreen.
I will.
And we will be out there sweating with you under our tent, at least. We'll have some cover tomorrow, but we'll be out there in the heat with you tomorrow. So we'll,
you have no idea how much I look forward to sweating with you.
I bet you do. There he goes. John Osier, senior writer for Jaguars.com. Thank you, buddy. Coming up next, we'll hear from Gus Bradley, some of his comments on day one of the final mini camp before training camp gets underway. And I will get to that countdown in the Monday Morning Quarterback with Blake Bortles coming in at number 98 among the most influential figures in the NFL in 2015, and Shad Khan coming in at number 84 on the list that has just revealed numbers 81 through 100 so far. So we'll get into that coming up as well. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday here with Fat Tony live at Everbank. I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Metro Rooter Wednesday, 695-1911 for Metro Rooter for all your plumbing needs, residential, commercial, industrial, septic systems, restaurant, grease trap service, you name it, your sink is clogged. Call Metro Rooter. Your septic tank explodes. Call Metro Rooter. We'll have the solution. Same day service, weekends included, the right people, the right equipment. Since 1978, visit MetroRooter.com or call 695-1911. There's one in every crowd, Tony. Often there's more than one in each crowd. But this morning that one happens to be Double D, Double T, Chad Scott. Who said that if he is repopulating the world with members of the Jaguars, like I said, can he choose from the roar of the Jags? That would be a wise selection, sir. You and what other four going forth? But we're asking today, Tom Bush Family Dealership's fan feedback question of the day. Who are the core five guys? Basically, if you're restarting the roster, what's the nucleus you're keeping? If you're starting from scratch with this Jaguar roster, who are the five players you're keeping off the current roster? Maybe you end up adding more, but who are the five that you say, this is where I choose to plant my flag, start my team, go from there?
Yeah, I remember how depressingly difficult this list was 2 years ago.
Oh, it's awful, right?
I guess. Because we had this discussion, guy. It was like, is Scobie on?
I mean, we talked about this yesterday, Tony. Maybe for us, there's maybe like eight guys, you know, that something in that range, right? And you feel pretty good about all of them. And I think that's the difference you're talking about, right? I mean, a couple of years ago, you couldn't come up with two or three that you wanted to keep.
Yeah, trying to think. 3 years ago, after that 2-14,
it was always, well, we'll start with Cecil Shorts,
right,
and we'll go from there.
It was trying to figure out the five guys. It was like, okay, Blackman. Like, honestly, that's where it was. Blackman,
Green D, Blackman, and Shorts.
I guess
so.
And people would be calling in to say maybe Gabbard will turn it around. And it's like, oh my gosh,
I know. Anger.
That's where you were.
Not anger at the roster. Brian Anger.
Buzz was certainly on that list.
Yes.
That sounds like about it.
That's the list. That was it. That was four.
Mojo.
We stopped at four.
Still had Mojo at that time.
Yeah, I suppose. And that is the thing. Now you stack them up any way you like, but for me, I'm not even looking at guys 30 years and older, right? I'm looking at, if you're building the core of the team, give me a young nucleus. Obviously, you know, if you had a quarterback like Tom Brady, 35, 36 years old, it'd be a different story, you know, who's established year after year after year at a high level. Jags don't have that right now at really any position, for the most part. So, share your thoughts with us on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. You can always hit the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at 641-1010. That doubles as the phone-in line as well. And the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Tony, Gus Bradley talking after practice yesterday, sweating profusely as he came to the microphone. And, here's what he had to say about day one of minicamp.
Good. You know, normally we don't talk about the heat. We probably won't talk much about it in training camp, but I thought today would be a great time to talk about it with our team. Just about, you know, this is what you can expect in training camp, and we have to be ready for it. I think the challenging part for our team, one we addressed yesterday in team meeting, was the time period from June 20th to July 27th, that time. You know, there's an off season that happens after the season and another one now, but we have to treat them differently. It's not time to take a month off and then start to come back and get your workouts in. We need to take a few days off, but then right after that, get back to work. And I think this is a great message for the heat and the temperature that we practice in today, how important it is, not only the hydration, but sleep, nutrition. That's what we had the meeting with after the team to say, all right, you just felt it, and some guys tightened up, and you know what it can do. So we want to take advantage of that. But overall, I was very pleased with the effort. The challenge is, you know, you watch it, and I think that, you know, if you start seeing guys have some mental errors and busts, then practice would continue, you know, because they have to learn to fight through that part of it. And, but I saw us, we were practicing well, we were pretty sharp, but I think, you know, we had a walkthrough at the end of practice, and I think it was a timer to say, all right, let's capture this right now, when they're feeling it, and, to send a message to them.
I've always thought, because of this, you know, the heat situation, I've always wanted the Jags to play three home games in September and wear white uniforms and make the other team suffer and play as, you know, I embrace 1 o'clock kickoffs early in the season. That's your home field advantage beyond the crowd noise, right? Everyone's got crowd noise to some degree or other. The heat is your home field advantage.
Yeah.
Get used to it.
And we'll see if it comes into play as they are home for the first 2 weeks this year to start the regular season
against
in September.
Two mostly southern-ish
sure.
teams, you know, Carolina and Miami. So,
well, Miami, they're certainly going to be used to the heat.
Right.
Carolina's not used to this heat, but they're used to heat.
No, it gets pretty steamy
yeah.
up in Carolina this
morning. Gus Bradley, talking after the first day in minicamp yesterday, was also asked about linebacker Thurston Armbrister and the improvement he's continued to show since rookie minicamp.
Yeah, we're going to get him some reps. We kind of limited Puzzle's reps, you know, kind of just a few to get a chance to see some younger guys. We did it really across the board. The third's got more reps today than any other practice that we've had. So we really want to challenge. I challenge the coaches to get those guys up with the first group and see what they can do.
Yeah, our Brister's got a chance to
sure.
make this roster.
You know, it's I know across the league, all 32 teams, they're going to have some undrafted guys that are pushing for roster spots, and a handful of guys are going to make it virtually across the league on these teams. But this is a linebacker core that is so thin, and it feels like we've had the same discussion about what's going on with the depth at linebacker for the past 4 or 5 years. And I know you can only fix so much in a single off season, but here it is again with an undrafted guy who may come into the season as the primary backup to Paul Posluszny, going into your regular season. So they're thin at that spot. You hope that Armbrister does show something and can earn that spot. Can he help him on special teams at all from that linebacker position as well? But I think it again points to just how thin they are at those spots across that linebacker.
Right.
Court.
You want him to be good because he's good, not because he's the best of a bad
right.
set of options. And this is a guy that Bob Babich, the defense coordinator, singled out as well a few weeks ago when he talked after one of the OTA practices. So keep an eye on Thurston Armbrister. If you're coming out tomorrow, by the way, if you are coming out, you know by now probably Jaguars.com/veteran minicamp is where you can print out your all-access pass. Free to enter, but you have to have that to get in. Gus was asked about having Chris Clemens back at minicamp.
You think Clem will dig deep and be here tomorrow?
Wow. Is that a challenge or attack?
Is he behind? Yeah.
Well, you know, knowledge of the scheme and things like that. No, he's not behind there. But reps, I mean, yeah, he's missed some OTAs and he missed some phase two, so. But his learning curve will be quick. He'll get it back. But I think I don't care what you say, you can be off on your own and you can work out. It's different than when you come and you practice with a team in a controlled environment like this. It's just different. And, you know, he's got to get acclimated to that.
And he will.
Yeah.
He's been doing it for how many years in the NFL?
Yeah.
Over 10.
And
so.
He and Gus Bradley have known each other for a lot of those years during his time around the National Football League as well. Gus Bradley also asked about one of the new additions to this team, Jared Odrick, and what his performances look like thus far in the offseason.
He has really come on. He has really stacked a couple of good practices together. I say that watching him this practice. I haven't seen the tape, but I know up until this point, I was thinking about that as far as guys. I know he started off a little slow getting used to the tempo of how we do things, but the last couple of weeks now, he's really picked it up. we're very pleased with him.
Interesting to see how he answers his next one. We hear the thoughts of Gus Bradley here on Jaguars Today. He was asked how, you know, in years past, the staff might have had a better idea of the guys making the roster as opposed to now with a lot more competition at some of these positions. Here's how he answered that question.
I think you're right. Yeah, we're going to have some tough decisions. Now, that's saying that without pads on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think that when you put the pads on, sometimes you start to see a separation. So for us to project right now, it's difficult because I know once you put those pads on, the guys are really going to, you know, that's when you start seeing things separate.
It's funny, Tony, you know, in years past, maybe you had a clear picture of who makes the roster because there weren't enough good players.
It's a bad thing.
Yeah, and it was like, wow, we know these 40 guys are head and shoulders above the rest, and we'll see if we can fill out the remaining spots. Now you hope the problem is it's difficult at the last few spots, not because you're trying to find competent talent, but because you have too many competent players for not enough positions.
And let's be honest. I mean, the last several years, the Jaguars have been a team that have been waiting for their teams to make cuts to see what kind of quality they can add.
Scoop it up a bunch.
Right, from what the Patriots, Seahawks, and all these other teams have been cutting because their rosters are at that much higher a level than what Jacksonville has been in the last 3 years. And it feels like this offseason, there are positions where they're still going to have to take a look at what teams are willing to let walk. We just talked about linebacker. Is that a spot they're going to look at with what other teams do in this league? But I think there will be teams watching what the Jaguars are going to do with their offensive line and their defensive line. And who are the guys that can't quite make it here in Jacksonville this year? Because their depth is so much better in those spots than it has been in recent years. Gus Bradley finishing up his press conference, a follow-up to that last question, talking about the roster. Ryan O'Halloran asked if linebacker and safeties are the two positions that kind of create the most separations once those pads do go on.
Well, linebackers, generally you see linebackers show up in preseason games. You do see that. Out of experience, you see that. So linebackers, safety, corners, you know, you can get a chance to evaluate them pretty good. I think it'll be better because right now there's no contact. So, you know, to get where they got pads on and can have contact, I think that will show up.
All right, Gus Bradley commenting after practice yesterday. I'm sure he'll talk more today and tomorrow as well. That's been his habit this all season, pretty much every practice, getting out in front of the microphone and dealing with us and the questions that we throw his way. We'll hear from Julius Thomas coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. While we've got a couple of minutes, mentioned this several times, the Monday Morning Quarterback Countdown on SI.com of the 100 most influential figures in the NFL for 2015. Blake Bortles coming in at number 98. I'll give you the rundown on what they had to say about him. I'll just give you the quick countdown as well, see if I can bring this up quickly. Here we go. At 100, Justin Houston of the Kansas City Chiefs, linebacker. He obviously has not agreed to terms on his contract tender as of now. Rachel Nichols, journalist, CNN, Peter King, I believe, wrote the story on that, on her, remarking on how she's challenged Roger Goodell on a lot of stuff over the last year or so. Blake Bortles coming in at 98. We'll read what they had to say about him in a moment and get through these 90s here. Richie Incognito with the Buffalo Bills, now at 97. John Fox, the head coach of the Bears at 96. Le'Veon Bell at 95, the Pittsburgh Steelers running back. Elliot Wolf, the director of player personnel for the Green Bay Packers. Didn't read the write-up on him. Wonder what the rationale is. Is it just to continue to see if, you know, a guy who builds almost exclusively, it seems, through the draft can continue to keep that team in contention at such a high level? Marcus Mariota, or Mariotto, as Goodell might call him. The quarterback of the Titans comes in at 93. Ray Rice at 92. I don't think Ray Rice is playing anymore, Tony. I mean, I said that about Mike Vick a long time ago, and I was proven wrong, and that was before he ever went to the penitentiary. Jail. He went to jail.
Yeah.
He went to jail, Tony. He went to prison. I don't think Ray Rice, I think he's done. He's too toxic with that video still fresh in people's minds.
Well, he's toxic, and his last season was not any good.
3.1 yards per carry. Over the last several years, he had the worst yards per carry of anyone with 200 or more carries. And going back, I want to say about a half decade of guys that
sure
qualified.
Sports has shown us over the course of years that if the guy is talented enough and can still do it, they're going to give him an opportunity to somewhere. Like, that's just the way it's going to work. The Ray Rice situation is, I'm not sure that he has anything left to give to an NFL team, and he's toxic enough that I'm not sure anybody's going to wait and find out.
Broncos GM John Elway at 91, Bill O'Brien, the head coach of the Texans at 90, Jason Light, the GM of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, DeMaurice Smith, the executive director of the NFL Players Association, came in at 88. Jim Harbaugh, how's Jim Harbaugh one of the 100 most influential people on the NFL? I haven't read the write-up on that, but he comes in at number 87, and I even list him as head coach, University of Michigan. Nigel Eccles, the CEO and founder of FanDuel. How about that? How about that, Tony? I mean, the impact, FanDuel is trying to corner the market on these daily fantasy sports. I mean, they have competition out there, DraftKings being their primary competition.
Right.
FanDuel has the biggest piece of the market share, but they continue to expand, spend huge money. I've seen several, instances where both they and DraftKings had sponsored various war rooms on draft day. I mean, they're just getting themselves, trying to get more ingrained. If one of these can become the official fantasy provider of the National Football League, you'll see them pretty much put the others out of business, I think. DraftKings did it with the NBA. That's not going to get it done, though. That's not going to...
And baseball.
That's not going to shut you out on both, right. They're not going to shut you down. If you... Not that DraftKings would shut down, but FanDuel would have such a big piece of the market share. They already do, but that's pretty amazing. Khalil Mack, the bust, according to O'Halloran, comes in at number 85. They said no player had a bigger discrepancy between the way he played and the lack of statistics that he produced, considering all the pressure that he got on quarterbacks. Shad Khan, owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, comes in at 84. Again, the list of the 100 most influential people in 2015 on the NFL. Brian Rolapp, the executive vice president for media for the NFL. Mike McCarthy, the head coach of the Packers, and Eli Manning coming in at 81, and those are the only 20 that have been released. A little bit later on, we'll tell you about the write-ups for both Blake Bortles and Shad Khan appearing in the first fifth of the top 100. Coming up next, this date in football history and the Honda drive around the NFL. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, this date in football history brought to you this week by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. Birthdays galore, Tony. Let's go back to 1923. Once you get this nickname, everybody knows exactly who you are, and nobody else can ever have this nickname again. Elroy Crazy Legs Hirsch played end, halfback, and defensive end, was the first full-time flanker. That's why he's listed as an end in the National Football League in the 1940s. Played with the Chicago Rockets of the All-American Football Association, or whatever the heck it was, before they merged with the NFL in the late 40s, where he then played primarily with the Los Angeles Rams the rest of the way, starting in 1949. Three-time Pro Bowler, two-time first-team All-Pro, as designated by the Associated Press, won the NFL championship with the Rams in 1951, a member of the 1950s All-Decade team, and the NFL's 50th anniversary all-time team, NFL yardage and touchdown leader in 1951, and a pro and college football Hall of Fame inductee. Likewise, 1965 brought us the now 50-year-old Pittsburgh center, former center Germani Dawson, a seven-time Pro Bowler, six-time first-team All-Pro, and a member of the Hall of Fame class of 2012. Happy birthday today, 39 years young, to the third leading tackler in Jaguar history, Mike Pete. Turns 39 today. 39's not old, Tony.
No, it's not.
Mike Pete played, of course, 4 years in Indy, 6 years here in Jacksonville, and 4 more years in Atlanta. That is one hell of a long career in NFL terms. So happy birthday to Mike Pete, and always a good interview post-game in the locker room as well. And on this date in 1981, one of the all-time turds of the National Football League was born. That would be Albert Haynesworth, turning only 34 today, Tony. He should be still... a valuable member of a veteran piece of some successful defensive line. Instead, he did just enough in a contract year, getting 8.5 of his career, 30.5 sacks with Tennessee to earn that over $100 million contract from Dan Snyder. And they just showed up and never tried.
Yep.
Barely showed up. Showed up in physically. Didn't show up mentally or effort-wise. as far as that goes. So there you have it. That is This State Football History, brought to you by First Coast Roofing, the only call you need to make for all your roofing needs, residential or commercial, repairs or re-roofs. Call 287-7756, license number CCC056797 for First Coast Roofing. That is This State in Football History.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Word came out a couple weeks ago that Eric Weddle and the San Diego Chargers were not going to negotiate a long-term extension this offseason, and Weddle's representation immediately put out a statement that indicated that Eric Weddle would be playing somewhere besides San Diego in 2016. That was reiterated in part by Weddle, who spoke after the team's minicamp practice yesterday, saying, quote, "It's obvious that I'm not part of this organization's long-term plan. The NFL is a business, and I can accept that. I just wish the organization had been upfront with me from day one." Russell Wilson is using a tack that is usually reserved for big-time college prospects going into their last year in school. Wilson and the Seahawks are still reportedly negotiating a long-term deal for Wilson, who is set to make $1.5 million this year. And the news yesterday is another indication of how those negotiations are going. Russell Wilson is taking out an insurance policy to protect himself financially from a career-ending injury should that occur this season. He has an insurance policy that would still pay him millions of dollars. Probably not the $24 million he could get as a franchise player next year, but some amount of money instead of zero money if he happens to get hurt this year.
Well, if he happens to have a career-ending injury. You know how difficult those things are? I know you do. I ask that rhetorically. I mean, they're so
well, if it's
ridiculous.
Anything but a career-ending injury, he's going to get paid by somebody.
Well, you know, JerMichael Finley, did he collect on his insurance policy?
I don't know.
Because he had one of those insurance policies, right, and had suffered some concussions, and at least one team's doctor, I believe, indicated as they worked him out that he was healthy enough to play. So nobody signed him. Is that a career-ending injury? I mean, it's very difficult to prove, and we know insurance companies don't want to pay out any money that they don't have to. The odds of Russell Wilson getting an injury so severe that he never is able to play at all, not play ineffectually, just not play, period. I mean, he'd have to have practically a Joe Theismann-type moment, right, where Joe's leg was shattered. And even then, there was a chance for Theismann to come back, but it was such a grievous injury, and it was at that stage of his career. And he did have an insurance policy that he opted to say, you know what, I can't play another down, or else I'm not going to collect on this, and the odds of me coming back are long anyway. But once, Tony, all it would take it would be one day in a veteran minicamp, right, that you're healthy enough to participate in, and that insurance company is not going to pay off. So
right.
I guess it's nice in the most catastrophic of circumstances. What if Russell Wilson just goes out there and doesn't play well this year? Go back and look what he did against Green Bay. I know you know, but I mean, he was miserable against the Packers.
Yeah.
And before they had that big comeback in the playoffs last year and got to the Super Bowl because of it, had the season ended with that thought in your mind, what would the narrative be like right now? Had they not won that game, now they came again within an eyelash of winning consecutive Super Bowls, as it turns out, and what happened is more important than what could have happened. But you think about that scenario, had he been coming off that game as the final taste left in everyone's mouth, and I think there'd be a lot more of a drumbeat that, hey, Seattle's doing the right thing here. What you hear from more people than not is Seattle would be smart to get it done now. I know Pete Prisco thinks, for instance, that Russell Wilson's not doesn't trust him long term because he doesn't do enough of his winning from the pocket, right? And okay, that's fine. That's your prerogative. But based on where things ended, I think more people are on the Russell Wilson deserves to get paid based on look at his TD to interception ratio, look at the wins, look at, you know, just what he's done as the face of that franchise, a Super Bowl victory, and just seconds away from possibly a second one.
Sure.
Had he ended that season against Green Bay last year, I think it'd be interesting to see what would be being said about that situation right now.
Yeah, because I think that there are still questions about, you know, what he's going to turn into long term in the National Football League, because he does need to get better as a passer from the pocket. I mean, he does. He needs to get better at doing that. And Seattle, by the way, realized this offseason they need to help him a little bit more than they did last year as far as weapons around him in that passing game too, which is why they make the trade for Jimmy Graham to try to help them. I know ESPN had an article up a couple days ago going in depth into the numbers of Russell Wilson and why he doesn't he doesn't deserve to be called an elite quarterback, whatever that means, in the National Football League. He's certainly an above-average quarterback, but not in that elite status. And they went into the metrics of, you know, how much the running game does help Russell Wilson, but when you compare that to how much the more than efficient passers affect games compared to the more than efficient runners at the quarterback position, that it's night and day. And that the guys that are going to be elite quarterbacks in this league have to be able to make plays from the pocket. And that, Pete, is right. I think that Russell Wilson is an above average quarterback, that he's around the top 10 in the league right now. And because of that, he's going to get paid whatever that merits to not have to go back into the pool and say, let's find the next guy that can do what Russell Wilson can do in the NFL draft. That's where the NFL is right now. You just saw Tannehill, you just saw Cam Newton, and I think Russell Wilson is certainly every bit the quarterback that those two guys are.
And that's the question, right? Do they see him as more on the Tannehill end of the scale, or they see him more on the, you know, Aaron Rodgers end of the scale?
Sure.
And I think the Seahawks see him probably, and regardless of where they see him on the scale, they know this. They don't have to pay him right now. You know, do the right thing. What's the right thing? They're a business, right? They've got him under contract. They're going to pay him $1.5 million this year. They can franchise him for the next couple of years and still afford it. And if you're the Seahawks and you have doubts about the long-term effectiveness of Russell Wilson, you got 3 more years of team control, basically, to find out if he's worth that mega, mega blockbuster, top of the market kind of deal. And, you know,
you'd basically be paying him like that. Outside of this year, you'd basically be paying him like that mega quarterback for 2 years to find that
you
out.
You would, but when you factor in the 1.5,
instead of doing it for
got,
6.
Right. Well, yeah, and you know, how much guaranteed money do you want to give this guy? Let's say he goes out there this year and regresses. I'm not saying he will, but I mean, the numbers indicate that he won't. He's going to get better, and they have over the first 3 years. For the most part. So, but if you're Seattle and you have doubts and you can wait, why don't we see what happens? What if he does suffer a knee injury? You know,
sure.
Not that they're wishing that on him, obviously, but they're protecting themselves. They don't have to stick their necks out right now.
And they're balancing a lot of things. We've heard the interviews from the guys that were on the last defense that was doing it this kind of way, was that Ravens defense, right, that carried that team to a Super Bowl championship while doing just ridiculously unbelievable historic things and have run that season to that championship for Baltimore. And they get to the next offseason, they're like, look, if we had a decent quarterback, if they had brought Dilfer back,
would have had to do all those things.
Right. We would have won another championship.
Right.
Like, the players on that team are convinced if they had brought back Trent Dilfer that he was good enough to get us to that kind of level again. And I think those are the discussions that are happening within Seattle in that front office, that they're trying to figure out how valuable this guy really is. And I understand having the discussion. I know there's the story that came out today, Bobby Wagner, who's one of the few guys that they don't have under their control on the defensive side of the ball right now, because they have figured out what they're doing with Sherman and Thomas and Chancellor and all these other guys. They got locked down. The key pieces of that defense are locked down. Bobby Wagner is saying that he wants $10 million a year.
Right.
At that linebacker spot. So trying to balance paying all those guys on the defense that are the reason they are as great as they are as a team right now, and what you do with Russell Wilson is a really weird balancing act. They've already shown a commitment to Marshawn Lynch because they realize that he really is the engine that makes things go for them on the offensive side of the ball right now, and they bring in Jimmy Graham to hopefully help Russell Wilson this year. Look, if his stats go up, then they're going to have to pay him something, and we'll just see what that number is going to wind up being for Seattle in the long run.
I think they'd happily give him like $15 million a year right now. I happily give him that. That's a bargain. I mean, that really is a bargain for good or top half of the league starting quarterbacks even. That's starting to become a bargain as far as that goes. This is the nature of the position. You know, people can argue nobody's worth that money. I don't know if it was ESPN. I'm trying to remember the site that I saw this on yesterday that did a top 10 list of the players that were worth the more than they earned last year, by the widest margin. And Michael Bennett was actually number 9 on that list, despite getting the new deal. And he's another guy on that defense that already, after 1 year, wants a new contract. Feels like he's outperformed it. According to the metrics they were looking at, he has. By the way, J.J. Watt went down as one of the 10 most underpaid players in the league last year, even making $15 million a year, based on what their system said he graded out to be actually worth to the team. He was like a $5 or $6 million bargain. You know who else was on there? Rasheen Mathis was on there. They said, I want to say the number they quoted was, in his last two games of the season, he faced 40 plays in coverage and gave up 1 3-yard completion during that time period. Rasheen is kind of taken on a bit of a Darryl Smith turn to his career. He's a guy that a lot of people thought was just done. We'd seen his best football, and he goes up to Detroit, and he has been in that starting lineup since and has gotten praise, particularly from, you know, again, the number cruncher types that really love what he's been able to do in coverage. Rasheen has just kept chugging along as a steady veteran. And, you know, over the last few years, based on the way he's played, probably would have been the best cornerback on this football team, quite frankly. But, you know, that's water under the bridge now. We'll hear from Julius Thomas coming up, and I'll give you the rundown on what Monday morning quarterback had to say about both Blake Bortles and Shad Khan as to why they consider them two of the 100 most influential figures to impact the 2015 NFL season. All that coming up on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Jaguars today, hashtag embrace the grind. No, don't use that one. Apparently the Giants are using that. Congratulations.
It's pretty terrible.
To them. Rise and grind, Tony. Ah, such a... I don't know. I don't need to see it. I don't need to see it. Rise and grind. Whatever. Go do your thing. I'm going to rise and slowly shuffle my way to the shower.
No limits.
That's what I'm going to do. No limits. At least it's shorter. Right? Easier to type out if you want to go that direction.
Just do it.
All those good things. All right. We've got a little Father's Day prize pack for you. $25 gift card to Jackson Social. And how can you get that, you ask? How could I have $25 in my pocket to spend at Jackson Social? Well, be the fourth caller at 641-1010, and Tyler Devitt will hook you up. You can head to 1010XL.com for more great Father's Day gift ideas. But right now, you can knock one out of the park. A $25 gift certificate to Jackson Social simply by being caller number 4 right now at 641-1010. We'll give Tyler a moment to deal with that before we get to Julius Thomas. Let's take a look at this Monday morning quarterback ranking of the 100 most influential figures in the National Football League. Tony, I'll tell you what the Monday morning quarterback had to say about Blake Bortles and Shad Khan, and you weigh in with your thoughts on that, please. At number 98, Bortles came in as ranked in the top 100 most influential figures for 2015, and the writing goes, quote, as far as young quarterbacks go, it's an age of instant gratification since the NFL expanded to 32 teams and the 8th division alignment in 2012. 9 rookie QBs have gone to the playoffs in year one. Playoffs? When the Jaguars selected Blake Bortles with the number 3 pick in the 2014 draft, they knew he was a different breed, a raw talent with the emphasis on raw. Despite his physical gifts, Bortles' mechanics were so out of whack that the Jaguars were leaning towards a redshirt year. He ended up debuting last September, compiling a few brilliant moments, but typically looking overwhelmed over the course of a 3-win season. The Jags have spent 2 seasons loading up on passing game weapons, spending big on walking mismatch Julius Thomas, I like that, and burning top 75 picks on Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee in the 2014 draft. Bortles doesn't have to be Mark Brunell. He doesn't even have to be David Garrard, but this is a fan base wearing the scars of 4 straight double-digit loss seasons and a fan base that just watched this year's number 3 overall pick, Dante Fowler, the long-awaited edge-rushing monster, crumple to the ground with a torn ACL while practicing in shorts. What Bortles has to do is show enough progress as a passer, particularly functionality within the pocket, to show that he won't be the next Blaine Gabbert. He has to become proof positive of hope in Jacksonville. Take exception to anything written there? You generally agree or what?
I think he has to become proof positive of hope is basically what we've all said this entire offseason.
Absolutely.
I don't like using the term burn top 75 picks on 2 wide receivers because burn makes it sound like you're throwing them into
up
the
in
wind.
Flames,
yeah.
Right, and there they go.
Like, I think Allen Robinson, everyone feels like it's going to be a pretty darn good NFL football player. I think Marquise Lee, certainly it's fair to have questions about a guy who got hurt his last year in college, and it's the reason he slipped down into the second round of the NFL draft at all, and through his first 2 years in the league going into his second offseason, is having those issues again. If you're not a little bit nervous about what Marquise Lee is going to be from a health perspective going through the early part of his career, then I don't think you're paying much attention. So I think that there are questions about those guys, and I certainly think that Blake is one of the he is the key turning piece for this Jaguars organization. It's interesting that he makes this list at all, because this is a team that I think a lot of people expect him to win 3-4 games this season. And I think that it says that even the guys who are on the league are looking at it saying, well, if Blake Bortles, who is a guy that the Jaguars take at 3 as kind of a project, more so than, say, a Teddy Bridgewater would have been, right, if you wait to take that guy. If they take a guy at 3 that's more of a project in the top 5 of the draft, let's see how this works out for him. I think that if you watched Blake Bortles last year, you don't have any doubt that he's already better than Blaine Gabbert. I don't think you had to watch much to figure out that he's already a better NFL quarterback and thrower than Blaine Gabbert was, but the expectations are certainly going to ramp up in year 2. I think that's completely fair.
I would agree with the comparison to Gabbert, although, to be fair, if you're a national pundit, you look at the quarterbacks who had enough attempts to qualify for the various rankings, he was dead last, you know, so you can look at it that way and say, hey, you know what, that's great, you feel that way, but the results haven't been there yet. I will say this, I don't take it to be that they meant they wasted picks when they said burn them here. I think they just simply used a phrase meaning they used picks in the top 75, because nobody is questioning the Allen Robinson selection at this point in time, despite the fact that he got hurt last year. He was very productive in his time on the field. But regardless, I thought it was astute overall for Monday Morning Quarterback to put Blake in the top 100, because I think he does have a huge impact on, you know, where this franchise goes from a fan base perspective. You know, what is it? Do you have a season? Is another season like last year? The conversation this time next year is about, are they getting ready to hit the reset button? Do they have to at least at the most critical position? And the goal to make all this work is that everything matures at about the same time, and that means Blake's got to be coming into it over these next couple years.
Yeah, and you're probably not going to do a write-up of Luke Jokel or, you know, the changes that they made on the offensive line or even Allen Robinson or Marquise Lee on a list like this. I think that they chose the right linchpin, right? Like, for the turnaround of the Jaguars offense, they chose the right guy to do a write-up about, and that is the quarterback going into his second year. That was a bit of a question coming into the National Football League. This is a guy that the team who drafted him, who took him at number 3 overall in the NFL draft, said, yeah, if he doesn't play this year, that's fine, right? That's just not the common talk about a guy you're selecting that high. It was the talk around Blake Bortles here in Jacksonville.
Once I saw Blake at 98, I thought, well, that does it for the Jags on the list. I was wrong. Shad Khan, owner of your Jaguars, came in at number 84. Keeping in mind, they've only released numbers 81 through 100. This is the Monday Morning Quarterback, the offshoot of Sports Illustrated, Peter King's site, that is ranking the 100 most influential figures for the NFL this year. Said about Shad Khan, quote, since Khan purchased the Jags in late 2011, his team has posted no more than 4 wins in a season, but Jacksonville has played an important role in one of the NFL's most prized initiatives, that being London. The Jaguars are midway through a 4-year agreement to play 1 regular season home game per year in London, a linchpin of the league's efforts to grow its presence in the UK and test the viability of a London-based NFL franchise. The Jaguars have shot down speculation that they could eventually relocate to London. And then in parentheses, a Union Jacks fan club already exists. Instead, portraying the international commitment as a lucrative investment that boosted revenue and stabilized the franchise financially since Khan bought the team. Either way, if the Jaguars extend their London arrangement past 2016, both the team and the NFL benefit. Okay, that's what they said about Shad Khan. He said he's very eager to extend that, and I suspect it will get done. I don't like the... I guess it's natural, you know, and it's certainly nowhere near what the conversation used to be like about this team going to Los Angeles. But just when they say the Jags have shot down speculation they could eventually relocate, instead portraying the international commitment as a lucrative investment, and then going on to say either way, they're saying, well, here's what they're saying, but we're not sure we're buying it.
Sure.
Right? And I'm not that shocked that that would be said. But for the most part, I thought it was pretty even-handed, as given the Jags side of the story, at least, portraying the commitment as a lucrative investment that boosted revenue, because that's exactly what it did.
And I think they're missing part of why Shad Khan does have a place on this list of the 100 most influential people in 2015. I think
he's a badass.
Well, he is, but I also think that in a league that is trying to figure out how to get people to go back to stadiums, that Shot Khan and what the Jaguars are doing is on the forefront of all of that.
Is Mark Lampe going to be number 73
right.
on this list?
And I think that is part of why Shot Khan deserves this kind of spot on a list like this. In a league where they are seriously trying to figure out how to combat the red zone, and basically people want to sit on their couch and watch the NFL action from their own home instead of going out and going to these stadiums anymore, the Jaguars are doing an incredible job of giving people a reason to come to the stadium, because you're not going to get an experience like that in your home. And that is a reason for them to be on a list like this.
We said it before. We walk by this electronic sign on our way out every day. It's in the sales department here, the sales office, ticket sales office. And it has three categories. I want to say new season ticket holders, renewals, mm-hmm. and what else do they have up
there? Year-to-date.
But there's a year-to-date, and there's a yesterday and a year-to-date for each of these three categories. But there are three main categories. It's like multi-year renewals, new season ticket holders, something else. And but they're all indicators of, are these things growing or not? And you'll either see a red face, which is a kind of a frown.
Mm-hmm.
You see a yellow, which is cautiously optimistic, kind of a neutral. And then you see a green smiley face that things are going well. And the day-to-day one, well, that's going to fluctuate. You might have a good day. You might have a bad day. Some days are better than others with sales. But all the year-to-date ones, Tony, all three categories, they're two green and a yellow up there yesterday. So at least one of them may be treading water. The other two are doing well. And as Mark Lamping said, they're ahead of their projections for where they are, or where they expected to be on ticket sales, and they have, expect to have more on the books, more season ticket holders starting 2015 than they did starting 2014. And you're right, that is a testament to everything that they've done around this franchise, the expectation of the fans that this team is going to get better as well, the money they spent in free agency this year, and the belief that they've brought in some playmakers in the draft. I mean, there's a hope. I don't know if it's a belief as much as there's a hope that this team is ready to take a step forward. And I think realistically it's more a belief or a hope, I guess I should say, than a belief that people are, there are some dyed-in-the-wool true believers that are going to believe it every year. But I think most people look at it and say, well, I want that to be the case.
Show me.
I'm a little skeptical of getting my heart broken again. But yet, even in those circumstances, they're showing up and buying tickets. So you're right. Shot on that front, and the front office here at Everbank has done a great job in that regard. All right, we'll take a timeout, and we will still get to this Julius Thomas sound coming up, coming out of the break. His thoughts on how minicamp is going, working with Allen Robinson, working with Blake Bortles, and more. That coming up, plus fan feedback spotlight today, asking you, what's the core of this team? Basically, what is the five-player nucleus that you would start a franchise with if you could pull five players from the current Jaguar roster to start over with? Who would those five be? We'll share your thoughts coming back on the other side, and ours as well, ours as well. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line before we're out of here today. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Continuing forward, live from Everbank, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony on 1010XL 92.5 FM. I'm all tangled up.
I was like, what are you doing?
I'm all tangled up. I can't get to the microphone, Tony. Oh, it's a blessing for everyone's ears out there in the city of Jacksonville. I keep showing up. They keep turning on the mic. I keep running my mouth. That's what we're going to do. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Metro Rooter Wednesday continuing on the big show as we've got Julius Thomas. Let's hear from him. Been meaning to get to this for the last half hour or so. Julius Thomas talked about his thoughts after day one of minicamp yesterday.
I think it went well.
Warm enough for you?
It was definitely warm enough. You know, I don't know what temperature it was, but, you know, they made sure to warn us about hydrating so we don't have any soft tissue injuries. But, you know, I think that it's a good level of energy. I think that both sides of the ball are doing what they can to make sure we're both getting better. And offensively, you know, we're building, we're working towards it, and, you know, that's what it's going to take. It's going to take every day of, you know, making a couple mistakes so that you can get some new teaching, and then making big plays so that you have the confidence.
He hasn't been out there for the entirety of the OTAs and minicamp, but for what he has been out there for, Allen Robinson apparently has been pretty impressive out there on the field. Julius Thomas was asked about the second-year wide receiver Allen Robinson and his play.
Yeah, I think that all those young receivers are doing a great job of working hard. You know, A-Rob did a lot of impressing last week. I guess we're not really supposed to talk about a lot of particular plays, but, you know, he's a great athlete, and that was apparent, so that was fun to see.
Julius getting the message, huh? How about that? Because that's what we count on, right? We count on once those guys say something
coach
in front
of an open
mic.
Coach or player says something, we can talk about it.
Now it's not off limits anymore, but Julius going with the party line and was asked yesterday about, you know, just not only yesterday, but up to this point, what has he seen, albeit in non-contact situations, but what has he seen from the Jaguars defense?
I think the defense is doing a great job as a unit. I think those linebackers in the middle are doing a great job of making their reads, getting to the ball. I like the overall energy that defense has. I mean, you know, you can really see that some of those guys have been playing together for a while, and that communication and that chemistry they have is it's serving them very well. Probably they don't learn the new system the way we are, but still you can see those guys flying around, making plays. So it's fun to watch those guys.
Julius Thomas didn't get the opportunity to see Blake Bortles during his rookie season and what he was actually doing on the field. I'm sure he's watched some film of what the Jaguars were doing last year and from his quarterback, but he was asked about the improvement he's seen from Blake Bortles in the 5 weeks that he has been able to be on the field with him.
It's been good. Definitely getting an opportunity to know him as a man on and off the field. You know, I've been very, very impressed with his work ethic. You know, he's not cutting corners. He really wants to come out here and play at a high level. And he's doing the things that it's going to take to do that. So, you know, very impressed with that and still young going into second year. So he's going to keep improving and we're going to keep doing all we can as a team to help him out.
And finally, new tight end Julius Thomas of the Jacksonville Jaguars asked if there's a plan in place with a six-week break coming up for he and Blake Bortles to spend some quality time together before training camp.
No, we don't have a plan yet, but you know, hoping to get together and do some throwing and maybe just even look at a little football. You know, a lot can be done without running routes, just starting to see different situations, different coverages, talking to them about, you know, my thoughts or Allen Robinson talking about his thoughts and him telling us, you know, what he's thinking, how he wants to see us run versus that coverage. So there's a lot that can be done outside of going out on the field and running a lot of routes. I mean, most of the mental part of the game and the understanding each other, a lot of that comes from being in the film room and looking at situations that came up. Okay, how do you want to go about this situation next? Where do you like the ball placed? Where do you want to throw it? There's a lot that'll happen, but nothing set up as far as right now, but I'm sure we'll get together.
Now, Julius Thomas, Tony, in addition to having the requisite talent and resume to fall back on in this regard, has impressed me, you know, from a leadership standpoint, as even to the point where he says, hey, I'm going to take a back seat. He's the quarterback. There's nothing I'm going to teach this guy. Okay, I'm here to support him, but it's clear he's a very impressive individual. All right, and I didn't know much about Julius Thomas, the guy, other than the numbers and watching his game and how open he would get for Peyton Manning and company in Denver. But he has matched that, I think, with his approach to preparation and thoughtfulness and all those things. So very excited. I think people are underestimating how big of an impact he can make on this passing game. And I, look, it's not all about the numbers, what final numbers you put up, whether he scores 12 touchdowns again, but I think some of the fact that, you know, he's going to lose out catching from one of the all-time great quarterbacks with a lot of other weapons that they can't concentrate on him, he's going to gain some. The fact that I think he's going to be so heavily targeted in certain situations.
Sure.
And, you know, I think he's going to be, he along with Allen Robinson, going to be the guys in the passing game. Whereas you had Demaryius Thomas at times, you had Wes Welker, Eric Decker putting up huge numbers, Emmanuel Sanders putting up huge numbers. That running game really put up huge numbers as well for the Broncos last year. And all the while, Julius Thomas, when he was healthy, that was the key, just continued to do his thing. And can't wait to see him, man. Can't wait to see a glimpse of him tomorrow from our broadcast location.
Yeah. We haven't had the opportunity to see him on field yet.
Not a bit.
So I'm looking forward to being out there and just seeing what Thomas looks like in a, I guess not the uniform.
Yeah, running some routes.
Gym shorts.
Yeah.
Gym class.
Get to go
watch him in gym class.
Todd Wash's gym class out there tomorrow. Again, final reminder that I can give you, jaguars.com/veteran minicamp. Okay, veteran minicamp. And print out your pass to attend the practice tomorrow. They just want to track how many people are coming out, stuff like that. But if you show up, they're going to ask you for it. So if you show up without it, Don't be upset when you get turned away. So print it out now. Have it in your car. Be ready to go. All right. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships presents a fan feedback spotlight. And before we get to some of the feedback today, I want to tell you, Tom Bush Mini, for many owners out there, they've got a cool thing going on this weekend. The Jacksonville Job. It's a photo scavenger hunt taking place this Saturday, June 20th at Tom Bush Mini, and folks are going to be given a list of landmarks around Jacksonville, and they'll have to drive around and take photos of these various spots featuring their Mini at these locations with a lot of cool prizes, and there's going to be a lot of money and stuff raised for communities and schools of Jacksonville to support their programs as well. If you want to find out more details about the event or anything having to do with Tom Bush Mini, visit TomBushMini.com, TomBushMini.com, or visit CIS Jack Store and more about communities and schools of Jacksonville as well. So that's going on this weekend over at Tom Bush Mini. Right now, we asked you today, who are the five core guys, basically? If you're starting fresh and building a roster around a central five players that you can pluck from the Jaguars, who are the five you want to go forward with off of this roster? What are some of the replies we got?
Since Bortles is almost a unanimous name in this, I won't mention Bortles' name every time.
He's on everyone.
But from Grant, we got Julius Thomas, Aaron Colvin, and Derek Marks, and Allen Robinson. From Cam, Allen Robinson, and Derek Marks, Dante Fowler Jr., and Telvin Smith. From Isaiah, TJ Yeldon, Dante Fowler Jr., and Derek Marks, and Allen Robinson. From Eric, Allen Robinson, Brandon Linder, Dante Fowler Jr., and TJ Yeldon. Hashtag Young Nucleus. From Christoph, Allen Robinson, Telvin Smith, TJ Yeldon, Dante Fowler Jr., youth desire, potential, greatness, hashtag my sorry, hashtag I am back. From Larry, we got Derek Marks, Telvin Smith, Aaron Colvin, Demetrius McCray. From Smashing Dan, we got, Allen Robinson, Julius Thomas, Dante Fowler Jr., and Aaron Colvin. From Alex, Allen Robinson, Julius Thomas, Derek Marks, and Jonathan Cyprian, the first mention of him. From Bobby Brown, Allen Robinson, Brandon Linder, the second time his name got mentioned, Telvin Smith, and Aaron Colvin. From Nick, Brandon Linder, Julius Thomas, Derek Marks, and Telvin Smith. So that's what we got.
I'm going to pick out any of the interesting names because there are a lot of repeat names on there. And we talked about this yesterday. Blake would definitely be on it for me. I would have Colvin and Telvin Smith on it. And I was leaning towards kind of Linder and trying to decide between Allen Robinson and Julius Thomas. You know, in hindsight, I might take both the skill guys and hope you can build an offensive line. If your right guard is your best lineman, that's not saying a ton. I mean, it's the circumstance they're in. Sometimes that is the best lineman you have on the team. Not too many offenses are built around a dominant right guard.
No, and look, that was kind of the conversation we were having about this yesterday when it came up at the end of the show. I think there's a difference for me between the five guys that I think are the core guys right now and who I want to be the core guys.
Right.
Like, I really want Luke Joeckel to be one of those guys.
And I want Dante Fowler Jr.
Right,
to be one.
And if I'm making that list, I may have Dante Fowler Jr. on the list anyway, because I do think he is still a core guy for this football team, despite the fact that he's not going to be around during his rookie season. He may still be on my group of five guys, because this league really is about your quarterback, protecting that quarterback, and getting the quarterback. And those are the three guys that they've drafted in their first 3 years here in Jacksonville to go do those three things. It's why Bortles is so important to this team. Dante Fowler Jr., it's why it's so disappointing that we're not going to see him in 2015. And we can't put Joeckel in that list yet because he hasn't lived up to the expectations of being the number two overall draft pick, even if it wasn't a bad year. But I think you want, after 2015, when we ask this question again, to go, oh yeah, Jokel's definitely part of that core
Absolutely.
Five.
Absolutely.
I mean,
you'd like him to maybe number two.
Right. And if he can play at that kind of level this year, I think it goes a long ways for getting this team back into competitive football.
A lot of the same repeat kind of answers or duplicated throughout the different ones. I see a Demetrius McCray in here. Cameron Franklin went with Paul Posluszny, Chris Clemens, Bortles, Stefan Wisniewski, and Julius Thomas. He said all key players who could teach younger or new guys a thing or two. I don't want that. I got coaches for that. Okay.
No.
A year from now, Paz and Clemens, what are they going to have left to give you? I don't think, I would suspect as Clemens last year at the team, wouldn't be shocked if it ends up being positives last year. You never know when injuries are going to catch up with him. I think he might squeeze out a couple more productive seasons for the Jaguars, but give me a Telvin Smith over Posluszny if I'm starting the franchise right now, just because I've got to think about the long term. I got to think at least in a 3 to 5 year window going ahead, and Posluszny and Clemens will not be here 5 years from now.
No, and look, this kind of list that we're talking about is a little bit of projecting because we didn't see a lot of these guys play at a super high level. It's why it's kind of easy to put Brandon Linder on that list, right? Because he did play really, really well as a rookie and got acclaim from around the league and the guys who are watching play by play, game by game, tape by tape, and know what's going on with interior line positions. This is a guy who's been talked about a lot. Telvin Smith made a lot of plays for this football team last year. I think that there are a lot of guys, even Allen Robinson to some degree, that you're saying he needs to be a part of the core, right? And that's the difficult position Jacksonville's in, but that's how they chose to do this rebuild, is there is a lot of this. We want him, we need him to be a part of the core based on the expectations we have for this guy. That doesn't mean that he is yet. He hasn't lived up to that kind of play potential yet, but you need him to if this whole rebuild's going to work.
Final comment here on the Facebook page, Jaguars Today on Facebook. Damon Austin said he went with Telvin Smith, Julius Thomas, Linder, McCray, and Bortles. Very reasonable, right? All among that kind of group we're talking about. Then he sent a second list. He said, or Allen Robinson, Aaron Colvinson, Derek Marks, Dante Fowler Jr., Allen Hurns. Take your pick, because, man, we haven't had this much talent for a minute. In other words, what we said earlier, getting hopefully into an area where you're going to have a good problem to have. You try to fit too many good players into too few a spot to have them. That goes for the whole roster. Make those last few cuts a little bit tougher. See the guys you release start to get picked up by other franchises around the National Football League. It's a sign that the competition level and the overall talent level has increased, and, you know, at the high end as well.
There's no doubt the young core on this team is a big core. Like, there's a lot of youth on this football team, and if they develop together this year, then it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Finally, Sergio Brown, according to Twitter, a non-participant in practice today. We'll get the scoop on that. Hopefully,
so
nothing.
Evans playing free safety, I would guess.
I would imagine so at this point in time. We'll get the word on that, I'm sure, as the day goes on. Jaguars.com live coming up in this very studio at the bottom of the next hour. But coming up next right here on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM, we welcome in the boys of XL Primetime. Thanks to Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor, and the Tom Bush family dealerships for bringing you the fan feedback spotlight today. Thanks to Johnny O from Jaguars.com for stopping by as well. For Fat Tony and Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, I am Mike Dempsey. This has been Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.